This is WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report, digging deeper into the issues that make and break our lives. And on this hour today, our guest is John Graves. John, welcome.
Well, thank you, Eric. Nice to be here.
Good to have you on the show today.
Thank you.
Now, you came, as all guests do, with a song to start the show with. Mm-hmm. And that song is Joni Mitchell's They Paved Paradise and Put Up a Parking Lot. And do you want to say a little bit before we go into that song, or do you want to hold your comments until we listen to it?
Well, the one thing that I always wanted to do was to play that song in front of Common Council, because I think our parking situation in Ithaca relates to this song.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay, so we are going to go to this song right now.
The paved paradise, put up a parking lot. With a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. Don't it always seem to go? You don't know what you've got till it's gone. They paved paradise, put up a parking lot. Now they took all the trees, put them in a tree museum. Charged all the people a dollar and a half just to see them. I said, don't it always seem to go? You don't know what you've got till it's gone. The day paradise put up a parking lot. Hey, farmer, farmer, put away that DDT now. Give me spots on my apples, believe me, the birds and the bees. Don't know what you've got till it's gone. They paved paradise, put up a parking lot. Late last night, I heard that screen door slam. And a big yellow taxi come and took away my old man. Till it's gone, they paved paradise, put up a parking lot. Late last night, I heard that screen door slam, and a big yellow tractor come and took away my house. It took away my land. I said, don't it always seem to go? You don't know what you've got till it's gone. They paved paradise, put up a parking lot. Paved paradise, put up a parking lot. The paved paradise,
put up a parking lot.
And that was a young Joni Mitchell with a live version of They Paved Paradise and Put Up a Parking Lot. And our guest this morning on the Made of Clay Report is John Graves. And John, tell me a little bit about yourself, and tell me how this song intersects with who you are.
Well, I can say I am the ultimate product of growing up in Ithaca.
Oh, so you were born here.
Yes, I was born in the old hospital up on East Hill, and in 1946.
And when you say that, people don't realize that it was on East Hill. It wasn't the Biggs Building up north of the current hospital.
I think all of the baby boomers were born in that hospital on East Hill.
It was closed in 1958, so only about the last 5 years would have not been born there.
Yeah.
It's off of Valentine Street.
Yes.
Right.
Yes,
and the building's still there, and it was where Lifelong was, but Longview was when
Longview.
It was Ithacare.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And after I was born, I was taken by my mother and father, and we lived on State Street with my brother behind my father's barbershop. So at 5 years old, my father built a house on Hector Street, the top of Hector Street. right at the city line. Mm-hmm. So it was still in the city. And the unusual thing was it was a suburban house, but the unusual thing was it had two huge, large picture windows facing the city of Ithaca. One was in the dining room, one was in the living room. Uh-huh. So every day I would get up and I'd have a view for breakfast of the city of Ithaca. Wow. And every night at dinner, I had the same view of the city of Ithaca. So I watched Ithaca change. I watched everything.
What year did you move there again?
And that would have been 51.
51. So you were, yeah.
And I stayed there until I went to college in New York. So that was 13 years.
Right.
Of watching the city of Ithaca.
Right.
From this, it was like Google Earth out these large picture mm-hmm. windows, which were unusual then because in the 50s, that's when picture windows came in
right.
to being. So I watched, the inlet being dredged. I watched the golf course when it flooded in the spring. I watched Cornell grow. I watched...
And the Rhine would have been out of your sight because you would have had, you couldn't have looked that straight down.
Not straight down, yeah, no. Yeah, but I could see, you know, that was when Ithaca College was still downtown.
Downtown, yeah.
And you know, all of the buildings were, there was a lot of construction even back then at Cornell. So it was a very, it, that's my love affair with Ithaca mm-hmm, started mm-hmm. then. That was like, you know, looking through those picture windows for 13 years really got me hooked on Ithaca.
Wow.
You know, and the great thing about Ithaca then was the, there was Cornell had farm and home days where everybody was let out of school and you could roam around Cornell. The Ithaca Police Department would have police days down at, before the Ithaca High School was built.
It was on the same grounds?
It was on the same ground. It was a big, that's where Ithaca College played football and Ithaca High School played football.
And near where they had fairgrounds in the past, or no?
I don't know. The fairgrounds were on the
other
end
of
13.
Right.
This was, down by Stewart Park.
Right, right. There were fairgrounds, I think, at one point near where Steamboat Landing, where the
Yeah, that was.
No, so that's where you were. Then that was your association.
That's my association.
Right. And since you were started looking out that window in 1951, when you were 3 years old, the population of Tompkins County has doubled, and we are the only upstate New York county that has seen significant population growth. Mm-hmm. We're kind of an unusual place. So you got to see the baseline from a really interesting vantage point.
I absolutely did. That's when every neighborhood was family oriented, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And neighborhood schools were the norm at that point.
Yeah,
walkable.
There was the West Side House, the South Side House. There was the North mm-hmm. Side House. Everybody had a very strong neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So tell me. Who are you that has this vision, this way of seeing?
Well, I think I'm just a normal person that mm-hmm. has a strong attachment to the city, to this
place,
this environment. Mm-hmm. And when I would go away, I'd go to away. I went to school in New York. I went to school in Philadelphia. I was totally pulled back here for some reason, mm-hmm. And it was probably because I had this bird's eye view of Ithaca, and I had a strong attachment to everything that went on. It was like one big family.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you was your extended family here? I mean, was it literally one big family, or was it a big family just because of the way you embraced it?
No, it was my extended family was here. My father was basically grew up in Ithaca, too. He mm-hmm. was an orphan who grew up in an orphanage in Lackawanna, New York, but would come here in the summers and stay with his father. Uh-huh. And they basically camped out at Cass Park.
Wow.
So yeah. I'm not totally familiar with that history because mm-hmm. it was... my father never really talked about his younger years, and he turned out to be a county legislator, so he was involved in the community.
Yeah, it sounds like he had a complicated start
Yes.
And sometimes it's hard to share that with your children, and sometimes you don't necessarily want to put them through what you mm-hmm. experienced.
Right.
So you brought more music with you. Shall we go to the
Absolutely.
Clash?
Absolutely. Sure.
Do you want to speak to this before we start or after?
Well, I can speak to it after. It's...
Okay. And we are going to play that. It's Rock the Casbah. Clash and Rock the Casbah, and our guest this morning on the Made of Clay Report is John Graves. So, John, you were mentioning that was part of a social movement, and I'm just wondering, can you tell me a bit about that?
Well, I think that during that period, this was like, it was about the oil and oil embargoes and the whole thing about fossil fuels, and they were bringing attention to, you know, we're so dependent on fossil fuels. Mm-hmm. And, the Clash was a group that kind of just was a crazy group. And every place they'd go to play, the police would close them down because apparently there was riots in England wherever they played. Mm-hmm. So this, you know, back then things were socially kind of confusing, and I think we're in the same period right now. And I picked that music because I think we're going back to those periods where everybody's going to have to get involved to correct the situation. There's a lot of things going on wrong, and energy is one of the big areas, climate change and everything else. It's so I picked a lot of this kind of music that is kind of pushing the envelope for political change.
And what kinds of change, you know, what lessons do you take? What do you, what kind of actions are you taking to make a change?
Well, you know, I'm the president of the South Hill Civic Association, and I live on South Hill, where the largest brownfield site, a toxic industrial site, exists. And for years and years, you know, everybody's raised their hands and said, what can we do? How do we do this? How can we fix this? And thankfully now there's a developer that's possibly on the horizon that is going to move this whole process forward, because the DEC would just slowly go about their business of trying to figure out what the problem was and remediate it as best they can. But when a developer comes on the situation, this just pushes the whole process forward. So I think areas like environmental cleanliness is very important. And Ithaca has a lot of very toxic sites. And
yes.
So,
I mean, one of the you're talking about the having kind of watched the place change, but also one of the things that if you were looking at the city, you wouldn't necessarily have noticed, but from the 1920s or 30s up until the 1990s or even now, the place of greatest reforestation in the United States is right around us here in central New York.
Absolutely.
And a lot of people don't realize that. And these are forests that are third and fourth growth, and they're covering up the scars of agricultural practices that were not sustainable. And also in the same way, we're covering up the scars of some industrial manufacturing practices that were not sustainable. Mm-hmm. And we have such a kind of a green attitude, but really we're just trying to work with the bare bones, and in some sense, and I'm going to say this is provocative, the carcass of a past that couldn't make it.
That's exactly right.
And doing it with some optimism and some hope. And so what do you see as the redevelopment on that site on South Hill?
Well, I'm hoping that it's going to go from a terribly toxic site. And it's not just on the site, it's off the site.
Right, no, it drains right down, yeah. It flows through the water.
So I'm hoping it can turn the page and be just the opposite. It can be the most forward-thinking and clean, environment that it possibly can be. So, you know, while that was in limbo before a developer turned up, a group of us on South Hill and other people in the city did plans for what it could look like—a redevelopment plan for Emerson.
And it's the old Morris Chain Building.
It's the old Morris Chain Building, and 100 years of toxic pollution was came out of that place, and you know, not dealt with in a proper manner, which that was the norm.
Right, and they were, I mean, it was the invention by the Morse brothers of the chain that allowed the bicycle, as we know it, to exist.
Right.
It also allowed the internal combustion engine to become a viable technique for transportation, because they could transfer power with this chain that they'd invented. None of that was possible without that invention. Now, we may argue about the merits of it, but at the same time, it was a powerful positive step for some.
Absolutely. Yeah. It created a huge amount of jobs.
Yeah, all over the world.
Major job producer up there. So, but is the vision for the future. So that's all behind us. And I hate to harp on bad stuff and say, you know, this this is bad, this is bad. You got to look at a vision for the future. So my vision for the future, I talk to a lot of people, and Francis Vanek at Cornell, who's in the engineering, he's a visiting engineering lecturer. I don't think he's visiting.
I associate him with being an economist as well, or having kind of that background as well, some of that.
He had his graduate-level engineering class do a big study on energy-wise, what it would take to run that huge plant, which is 800,000 square feet, how it could be run, how you could get the heat and electricity in the greenest manner possible. And they did a 110-page scenarios for what it could look like. And it could have combined heat and power, so they could basically be, pretty much off-grid, grid. They could create their own electricity and heat, co-generate their own heat. And they could have solar panels on the roof, so they could tie that into the system. So this, and they could save the person that owned that property $1 million a year on their energy bill, compared to conventional. So that was very interesting. Now I hope that the eventual developer looks at that and looks at it closely, because that's a great plan.
Yes, yes. And what are the uses that the developer's looking at, or what uses did you look at?
Well, Tompkins County continually says we need housing, and I believe it, because housing prices are extremely expensive. So housing is a big part of it. It's basically a mixed use with light industrial involved, would be involved. Now, how that all eventually is going to roll out, I don't know, because the developer has to do a lot of just to see what other areas of that site is polluted. So he's got to do a lot of work before he can get into the redevelopment plans.
Right. And when you say mixed use and need for housing, I just want to illustrate this. And your move to Hector Street is a useful date, because around 1950 there was 55,000 people in Tompkins County. Now there are 105,000. So there's been a doubling in the population. In that same time zone, there was probably around 20,000, this is ballpark, 21,000 jobs for permanent residents, not including student jobs. Mm-hmm. Now there are 60,000. Population's doubled, jobs have increased threefold. And we really haven't, and that's why we have the pressure on housing the way we have it here. And the economies around us have just flatlined in some of the rural areas.
Right.
And people are grateful to come in here, but people who come in here to work can't find housing here.
I understand.
So the mixed development piece is really, really important.
Absolutely. And housing is a huge subject, because in my neighborhood, that used to be, on South Hill, used to be working families. Mm-hmm, that owner-occupied working family housing.
Walking to work, mostly.
And as we know, 45% of those families have fled the city of Ithaca, have left.
Right.
That void has been taken up by student housing.
Right, right, and by individuals and couples that don't have children, because it used to be very child-centered, and multi-generational households as well, very, very often. No, it's changed the way the rest of the country has changed. So what do you know anything specific about the mixed uses that they have in mind, or that you would encourage them to consider?
The plans that we had worked up was basically more not high-rise housing.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, that would work maybe in a part of the property, but we were kind of thinking the best would be kind of low impact housing, not huge towering buildings.
But no, but fairly dense. Dense occupancy.
Very dense, without being oriented towards the automobile. In other words, right. You know.
And would you be reusing the existing building there in addition to the rest of the site? Or
I personally think that that building is so polluted and so would be such a disaster to tear it down that it would have to be repurposed.
So it would have to be totally encased.
Yes.
And then and reused.
Yes, and then it would, housing probably is not going to be the prime use of that.
Right.
It would be like that's where the light industrial could come
right.
in.
Right. Right.
In incubator space.
Right.
And you know, clean energy production. So there's all kinds of things that could happen up there, and there's people in the community that are interested to see the best use of that property happen, and I hope that when this all rolls out, we get the best use.
So I want to change subjects just a little bit here. What specifically about Ithaca keeps bringing you back? What work opportunities, family, what kept bringing you back? You went away to New York City for college and I guess graduate school or something else in Philadelphia?
No, I went to two schools I was, you know, and then I was in the military and then I was drafted into the Army at a terrible time. Never went to Vietnam. I mean, by the luck of the draw. And then when I got out, I looked for a place to stay in Philadelphia with my wife at that time, who was pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, then that's when the reality of the situation hit. Hey, I have a little nest. Because my wife's from Ithaca, too.
Oh, really?
So, you know, we were very familiar with Ithaca, and we came back here, and I never had a career or anything. I did house painting. I did, you know, like a lot of the people in Ithaca that aren't career oriented.
Right.
You just do what you have to do to make a paycheck and pay your rent.
Right. Right. And well, I mean, the thing is, what you're saying there is that you've been able to stay in Ithaca, and a lot of the people that I've known in my block on Aurora Street or in Fall Creek area, you know, their children, even if they wanted to stay in Ithaca, they couldn't afford the inflated housing costs and the taxes. And so they ended up moving in the 80s and 90s to the outlying townships, and now they're moving out of the county because they really can't afford to stay here. There's a generational turnover. So that, you know.
And that's,
but you were able to stay. You were able to cobble it together.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. And that's too bad. You know, that it should be easy to stay in a town that you love and not have to move because you can't afford what you make it working can't afford you a place to live.
Right.
I mean, that just seems ridiculous.
And what you're saying is in effect that the area is not paying for the full cost of growth. Because we have been a successful growth economy, you know, even as manufacturing collapsed in 78, 79, 80, which is when it collapsed here, even in those years, you know, those were the years that higher education just began to take off in terms of employment.
Right.
And you know, we have been a very successful, strong growth county, and we still have problems when people can't stay who have jobs.
Yeah, and it comes down to taxes because
that
educational institutions don't pay taxes. So that raises, I mean, taxes alone are much higher than my mortgage.
Yeah.
I mean,
No, I know. I'm at parity right now.
So that's a problem. And how do you overcome that? Well, you have to build more housing until you reach a saturation point where prices come down.
But people will get worried because we as Americans, most of what we have in equity in our house is what we have for emergencies and later years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's our cushion because we don't save enough to otherwise to fund ourselves. And so anything that dampens the growth of housing values is going to be threatening to people who already own houses.
Well, that's a reason that I haven't.
But it does reduce taxes. It would reduce the.
So when your mortgage is lower than your taxes, mm-hmm. I think the first place to start is try to get the taxes down.
So the
thing that's scary, I hadn't thought of what you just said, but the thing that's scary to most people is they think of density. Wow, I don't want to live in a high-rise, dense community like Collegetown all over Ithaca. And I see Ithaca trying to retain what makes it so special by doing infill. So when you don't see a big, huge development, you see more of individual houses. But property prices are so high, it prevents somebody from, buying a property and building a house on it because property prices are so high, you have to build a high rise to make it work out financially.
Right, I wanted to use infill in a slightly different way. Once, when I was in graduate school, looking at tourism kinds of issues in the county, and I estimated that we had probably 5,000 to 10,000 unused bedrooms in the county on any given night, even when all of the colleges were fully occupied, because so many people have more house than they need. So that infill, in some ways, is a very different thing than building new stuff, because we've already got, I imagine, a whole lot of infrastructure, but we don't know how to share it.
Yes.
And that raises a whole other set of thorny relational issues, and how you have space and how you share space with people who mm-hmm. you are or aren't lonely, limitedly related to. So those are lots of questions, but we could solve a lot of our housing problem if we had, if people could, in good faith, use the space that they already own.
Yeah, that's very interesting.
You're listening to the Made of Clay Report. This is WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and our guest this morning is John Graves. And John, can we cut the Buffalo Soldier?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so we're gonna catch a bit of Bob Marley and Buffalo Soldier.
From, then you wouldn't have to ask me.
And that was Bob Marley and Buffalo Soldier. And you're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, 88.1 in Ithaca and 91.9 in Watkins Glen. And our guest this morning on the Made of Clay Report is John Graves.
And I think Bob Marley is another musician that just expands in a musical way, expands our horizons. And I think that it's another way to look at the world in a musical fashion, which the music is just incredible. Mm-hmm. But he's got a great message.
Right. And what do you take from that particular song?
You know, it's all of his songs that work together. It's right. Not that one particular song. I mean, I thought Buffalo Soldiers were the African Americans that came here and were enlisted in the cavalry to mm-hmm. take care of the Indians.
Yeah.
Now, listening to that song, that doesn't come across that much, but
that's what's behind the song. And because people don't know it, that's what's what matters. Remember, you know, my older brother's just a few years younger than you are, and he went off to college and came back and showed me that song, and he said, you know, did you know that? And I was on a farm in Northwest Missouri, and I had never heard of Buffalo Soldiers in 1973 or whatever. So it was good. It was a general part of the education of people who were open to figure it out and good music.
Yeah,
and good music.
Absolutely.
And that's how music works. John, how have you changed? What lessons have you learned that has kind of forced you to adopt a new strategy, change some values, put yourself back together again in a different way?
Well, you know, I think every human being changes large amounts, and I have totally matured, I think. I think I've matured, and I think I'm a better communicator now than I used to be in my youth.
And what changed to make you a better communicator? What are the signs of maturity?
To try to look at other viewpoints. Mm-hmm. So I can have a very, hard belief in something. And then as I talk, it's just like talking to you, you know. Mm-hmm. We talk together and you bring up points that I never really even thought about. So that to me is maturing, because you can see other points of view. And mm-hmm. The bottom line is we're all trying to get to a point where things are better. So
however we define better.
However we define it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, that's basically how I have changed. I think that I'm not so much, you know, living in the moment in terms of like reacting to stuff, but like first filtering it through my mind and going, is this the right direction or not?
Well, you like two things, very different things come to mind. And, you know, when you're living reactively, you're living to the moment that just passed.
Yeah.
And when you live with a wider sense of time, you can live in the moment that includes the deep past and the far future, because you're centered in just trying to take in what you can and let it flow through you in a way that makes sense to you rationally or emotionally or even physically. And that's one of the other thing you were saying about, you know, I didn't know you before you walked in mm-hmm. to this studio this morning, and at this point in the show, most of my guests I don't know.
Yeah.
So we just get to know each other in the course of this hour, and part of the purpose of this show is for us to have a good conversation that people can overhear.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're going to make me think about things I haven't thought about, just like or make me make connections I never knew existed, and I'm doing the same thing for you, and other people listen in. To me, one of the most important elements of a high functioning community is most of what we know we learned from eavesdropping.
Yeah.
you know, hearing the conversations of our friends or people who we respected but didn't feel like we could really engage, you know, or hearing or you know, overhearing our parents or people that, and you witness a lot of not good stuff, but right. you know, that's when you're just kind of taking it in and you don't have to act on it. Mm-hmm. You just process it,
right?
And we are both and as we become more mature, as you say, you know, we become a little more flexible in how we can take stuff in.
Yes.
And I think that's yes. that is profound. That yes. is profound. Have you had to let go? Have you had to let go of anything to kind of move on with your life?
Well, in the political realm, as a lot
well, I mean, this can be political or personal because it's what you feel comfortable addressing.
Yeah. Politically, I have had to let go because, like I said, you know, I grew up overseeing like Google Earth Ithaca for 13 years and thought, this is a perfect place. This has got everything that is working. You know, the population's working, the environments seem to be working, even though I didn't know mm-hmm. Emerson was being polluted. But you know, and then when I would go to, when I started to get involved on South Hill in what's happening in the neighborhood, and I would go to meetings at City Hall about density, mm-hmm. increasing density, I was totally opposed to that. It was because I thought, like everybody else, we were going to just turn into a big city like Syracuse or someplace else where it'll be high-rise buildings and everybody will live in the surrounding area and the downtown will be a great big huge metropolis. And
everybody will be in their own bubble.
And everybody will be in their own bubble. But after going to many meetings and speaking with other people that lived in Ithaca and could see, you know, the sunshed would go, the view shed would go, everything would go, I started to understand that, you know, there is something that we do need to increase housing because of the high cost of housing, but you have to do it in a way that doesn't destroy what you're trying to preserve.
Right, and the irony of it is that we can't go back to what's already been destroyed.
No,
so we have to make something new.
That's right.
And one of the ironic and I think maturing observations, which I have not heard said about Ithaca, many young people came here in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s and stayed. And they saw this as that idyllic place, but when it didn't work out the way they wanted it to or the way they thought it should, they became embittered. Mm-hmm. And our politics was really nasty. In the 70s and 80s and early 90s, I think we've stepped back from that a little bit. But I think untempered expectations of what is pure mm-hmm. drive people. I mean, we see that in religious fundamentalism.
Right.
We've seen it in the left
right.
here.
Right.
And stepping back with some compassion and some realism is really a tough lesson.
No, it is, and I agree. You know, we've gone through some hard times. And basically having the conversation with people in this community, we could, because that's what made this such a great community before, mm-hmm. is as far as I was as a kid, you know, I would like we had everything. We had the youth center downtown, we had a YMCA downtown, we had the West Side houses, all those, and kids could communicate and they could play together and they could you know, get to know each other.
Right.
And I'm not so sure that's happening now.
It's harder. It's harder. And one of the things that Ithaca, while we are a very small city, like 312 out of 324 metropolitan statistical areas, we function like a big city.
Mm-hmm.
Our economy is dominated by nonprofits, like big cities are dominated by education and healthcare institutions. Those are three or four of our biggest employers. So it's you know, we really are a much, we are in structure much like a bigger city than we see ourselves, and yeah. we trip over that fact sometimes.
I think so.
I want to come to, I want to go and play this song "Why the Wires" by a local band, Telegraph Flats. Do you want to introduce it, or do you want to come
well,
after?
Well, in full disclosure, this is my son-in-law.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and I think that he illustrates to me the kind of smoldering anger that exists, you know, exists in throughout our social network. You know, there is like, and I think we are on the verge of like getting something straight. I mean, somehow we're going to have to get things straight. So I think that this is just this kind of music is like kind of the Clash in a way.
Okay.
You know,
it's a Clash that you're very close to.
Yeah. So I think it's a kind of music that represents what's happening today.
Telegraph Flats.
And that was Why the Wires by Telegraph Flats. And our guest this morning on...
Wait, let me correct you. It was just the opposite.
Hold it. Oh, okay.
It's Why the Wires is the group. Telegraph Flats is the song.
Yes, Telegraph Flats. Okay. Thank you. And it's and your son-in-law...
Yes.
...is in the group.
Yes.
Good. Good. I speak boldly and put both feet down my throat. So thank you for correcting me. And yes, for our last segment here, because we've got about about 10 more minutes, and so we've got another piece of music to play. What do you do? And our guest this morning is John Graves on this hour of Made of Clay Report. John, what do you do to sustain yourself? What do you do to kind of get your mind and your body and your heart back in shape and place? And what do you do?
Well, I try to do as much, walking or, physical activity as I can do. But basically, when things get really tough, I get into the listening to myself breathe and trying to get in touch with my own body. So basically, it's, something that I started when I was young. I don't do it a lot, but when things get really tense and, crazy, I meditate.
Right. And first you said you breathe.
I breathe.
You breathe. And those two, for many of us, are synonymous, but I think, for people who aren't necessarily familiar with the practice, those are not necessarily synonymous actions. And so how is breathing meditation?
Well, listening to your breathing, you can get into other functions of your body, like you can feel your heartbeat. Mm-hmm, so, mm-hmm. I'm not a constant meditator or anything like that, but when things get kind of rough and when I'm on vacation, I like to kind of get in touch with my body.
Right. I've noticed from several of our guests that there seem to be two different approaches to how people deal with the practices and the skills that they use to restore themselves. And one approach is essentially to have a daily practice. And that accounts for a big, not majority, but a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And then another big chunk of people, they just, I want to do it. I want to know that I have the ability to see when things are falling apart, and that's when I take care of myself. Mm-hmm. So, and I think you're saying you're the latter.
I'm the latter part.
Yeah. So, and what's really important when a person has a practice like that is how do you catch yourself? What do you notice changing where you need to stop and take a breathing moment or a meditation moment?
No, I can tell by sleepless nights and problems that I can't resolve on my own. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I mean, in my mind. So and then that turns into other stressful things,
right?
All kinds of things can happen to you once you're under stress. So I know when I reach that point what I got to do, and it's like get myself back together.
I understand. Now I want to leave a little time to talk after this last song, but you wanted us to play a piece written by another local musician. Mm-hmm. And do you want to introduce it?
This is Sherman Kelly and Judy Abrams. Sherman is well known for Dancing in the Moonlight. Mm-hmm. And I think Judy has kind of moved Sherman into the realm of kind of getting active. Mm-hmm. in the fracking movement.
Right.
And this is a song that they just decided, hey, let's do something. So, right.
So here it is, Sherman Kelly and Judy Abrams on with their anti-fracking song.
Terrorists are attacking, hydrofracking our town. They're drilling for gas right now. You know they're blowing it out of the ground. are attacking. They don't care about the rules. They can break any law they want, and they can treat us just like we're fools. They're gonna poison our water. They're gonna poison our air. They only wanna make money. They don't care. They poison Colorado, and then they poison Texas too. They poison Pennsylvania, and now they poison me and you. If you care about the Finger Lakes, if you care about our land, if you care about the future, you've got to help us make a stand. Say goodbye to clean water. Say goodbye to clean air. Say goodbye to the land you love, because they're fracking up everywhere. Don't let them poison our water. Don't let them poison our air. They only want to make money. Show them that we care. Show them that we care. Let's show them that we care. Let's show them.
And that was Sherman Kelly and Judy Abrams with the anti-fracking song, Don't Let Them Poison Our Water, Don't Let Them Poison Our Air, and Let's Show Them That We Care. And our guest for this hour of the Made of Clay Report has been John Graves. And John, what thought do you want to leave us with this morning?
I think the most important thought of all is that everybody's got to get involved. I mean, we can't leave anything up to other people. Our voice, each person's voice has to be heard, and you have to, even though you're not used to it, you have to speak up and try to make this planet as best we can, and we can start right here in Ithaca. So
right. And yeah, and you just said something really important, but I think I want to unpack it without challenging it. But I believe we all need to speak up, but so many times that has been said with kind of a heroic tone that, you know, people have to speak up so they can take over. Mm-hmm. Well, people have to speak up so their needs can be heard, and we can also listen to others mm-hmm. who don't have voices,
right.
Usually. So speaking up isn't something that shouts anybody else down,
no.
But it gets us all on the table. With
that's,
each other.
That's exactly right.
And that is so often lost in that rhetorical fight. You know, everybody's shouting and nobody's listening.
The conversation,
yeah.
Just like
yeah.
we're having, yep. is the most important thing.
John, it has been a delight to get to know you.
And thank you, Eric.
And thank you for being on the show. And you're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, 88.1 in Ithaca, 91.9 in Watkins Glen, and streaming over the internet at WRFI.org. Also, you will be able to find past shows at madeofclay.org should you wish to go back and hear some of the shows in the past or check in the future.